User.com. Mike, you got to tell me, how the heck did you guys get this domain? It's probably one of the coolest domains I've seen. Tell me the story. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, story, how we've done it, we've bought it. So the story might not sound very interesting at the beginning, but when you go into details, it might be more like exciting story. So our previous name was User Engage. Yeah, we've started as userengage.io, so like a startup. Then we've decided to like invest in brand, and we've bought domain userengage.com when we like launch our business, we grow a little. And someday we were bootstrapped for a very long time, and someday our founder and CEO Greg just like have written an email for two domains, engage.com and user.com. Yeah, so we've started negotiations, but as a bootstrapped company, it was totally out of our reach. Yeah, so we've we didn't like even imagine to have such money, but we started to negotiate. Yeah, okay, maybe we can like borrow some money or something like that. And we negotiate with the owner of this domain. It was like some guy who wasn't like a professional domain dealer or something like that, but it was guy who just bought domain a couple years ago. So we've talked with him. The negotiation was for, I don't know, 9 or 10 months. But someday we've decided, after being for a long time a bootstrapped company, to look for some funding. Yeah, but we've negotiated. I remember that initial price started with 400k euro.
Wow.
But we negotiating, but you know, 9 months. Yeah. So we were able to drop it to $150k. And we got a deal, but meanwhile, we were negotiating our first financial round. We didn't get a VC investor, but like industry investor. We've confirmed a deal, but we didn't have that money on our bank account. Greg, even in negotiation, while negotiations, told that, okay, he will rent his house, move to smaller apartment. And it was like negotiating technique, but it would really happen because we didn't have this money on our bank account. So yeah, we've bought it. It was a little bit stress. But starting something as like totally impossible and just try to do it, it can happen. Yeah.
Man, I appreciate the story and I appreciate the transparency of the numbers. That's really interesting. I never actually.
I think that we've bought it at very cheap price, at very fair price. Yeah. So.
Yeah, when I was thinking that, when I was asking that question, I didn't necessarily have a number in mind that I thought you guys paid. I hadn't got to that point yet. But if I had to guess in hindsight, without you telling me that, I probably would have guessed that you would have paid mid six figures for something like that. So the fact that you paid, you know, lower six figures, like dude, the domain itself, it has already appreciated in value, right? So it's like, yes, you got a good deal on that. That's super interesting. On a quick tangent, so I'm building like an email design platform, basically specifically like allowing people to create better emails in minutes. And I bought like every version of the ending, like the .co, the .net, the .io, whatever. And I'm purposely not sharing the name of it because it's not live and people could go to the site if they were to find it. But I bought the .com, and you know, at a much smaller scale, it was a negotiation. I think the guy initially wanted like 40 or 50,000. I negotiated him down to 10,000. And I had the cash to pay for either, but I even negotiated a payment plan. So it's like, I don't want to put all my cash into it if I don't have to. I'd rather get on a payment plan. So I got it down to like $10,000. put $5,000 up front, and then I'm paying off the next $5,000 over a year. So long-winded, the reason I say that, right, is like, I think the dot-com is so important, right? There's no price that you can put on that real estate for your brand if you plan to build and potentially sell. So I feel like I got a good deal. I think you guys got a great deal. And you can kind of get creative and strategic with how you negotiate it. Like, I never had done this before, but I was like, I might as well say this is what I could do, and they can kind of take it or leave it, right? So
yes, kind of interesting. This is the price of the domain is like price of the art. Yes. So, or like, what is the value of that picture? You can't name it. You can't like compare it to many things. And I think that when you are building a company, our evolution is like pretty good to observe. Like, we started with a really cool name, userengage.io. That was probably the only startup name. But then we've paid, I don't remember the number, but some about like $6,000 or something like that, or $10,000. It wasn't like those huge amount for userengage.com. But like user.com, it is like one of our biggest, maybe not value, because we are like profitable company and our MRR is quite good and we are growing. But this is like one of the biggest assets. Much easier to build a brand identity up on that domain.
It's interesting. It's kind of like there's two value there. One is building the domain, or kind of the authority on the domain and whatnot. But the other is like, when you then share people the domain, it already seems like it probably has more authority than it probably does, right? Like, so yes, it's kind of like this two-way thing. Like, you drive more value to it the bigger that you guys get. But the more that people see it, regardless of your size, the more that they perceive that you guys are this really big, legitimate company, which obviously you guys have become that, right? Maybe when you first acquired it, maybe you were or weren't, but you guys have definitely become that.
We are not a Salesforce or HubSpot. We are targeting that way, and we want to be there someday. But still, we are not a startup. Preferably be called like scale up. So about like 60 people on board. So we are still pretty small company in terms of where we want to be. But yes, totally. Especially with big customers, this domain, you are treated in a different way. It was one of the part with what, like, from a startup, we became a company. So of course, like team growth, procedures, processes, growth in terms of number of clients, but like buying that domain was a big step in our evolution. Yeah,
that's awesome. Well, let's talk about growth. I know you're a co-founder. I know you're kind of like one of the heads of marketing at the company. Let's talk about growth. So as I mentioned, selfishly, I'm building this email design platform. So I want to learn about, you know, how have you guys grown, right? You know, so you've been around, is it about 5 or 6 years?
Yes. Right now, company was established at 1st January 2017, but like it was like some landing page, and me joining was in 2016. So we started, first paying customer was in 2016.
Okay. And what are some of the things like today that are working? Obviously, the landscape back then was probably very different than today. Like, what are some of the ways that you guys acquire customers today, right? I know, obviously, we're doing a podcast, maybe it's things like podcasts. I spoke at your guys' event a couple weeks ago, so maybe it's things like events. Like, what are the things that are working in 2020 for SaaS businesses to kind of grow and scale profitably?
Okay, so while we were starting a business, we've go with this strategy of comparison. So we were like alternative to Intercom. And still many companies like treat user.com as a like alternative to Intercom. But at that time, Intercom was a different company and different technology. We were also a different technology and a different company. Depending on, I think, who is your ideal persona, specific tools will differ. We started as a tool for marketing automation, but like live chat with pop-ups, emails, and some automation process upon that we've built a CRM. But currently we are rather like a customer data platform marketing all-in-one tool because we cover many channels in one tool. So I think that the comparison to like well-known brand is at the beginning a very, very good strategy. Yeah. So if you are alternative to MailChimp or you are alternative to Klaviyo and your ideal persona know that what that perfect tool do, it's a very good start. But after that, you have to find your way. You have to define yourself. Who is your target persona? What is user.com? Yeah, so not an alternative to, but build your own brand. Probably what you, Chase, is doing is, I think, very, very, it can be very, very successful. So content marketing and like doing this inbound marketing. But in our case, we are competing with HubSpot, yeah, and they like figure out what is inbound marketing and content marketing. They like discover it, and it's really, really hard to compete on this area with this so well-known brand. Yeah, so in terms of our strategy of growth, it's not like content marketing or inbound marketing. Conferences is like virtual conferences where is a good idea. So if you are organizing it well, we've organized such global conferences 2 times. One where you were a speaker, like Grow Your Store, and another was like SaaS Growth Summit. The recordings from SaaS Growth Summit are still available at saasgrowth.user.com. So there are a lot of speakers who can answer that question you've asked me, like Nathan Letka, Patrick Campbell, and April Danford, and many, many more. And they were like talking about like how to grow your SaaS business. From our perspective, like organizing a good sales team, yeah, it's a good idea, especially when you target a bigger customers, when you like negotiate a deal. If you want to go with the low touch approach, probably great UI, great UX is the way to grow your SaaS. But like solving customer problems, yeah, this is the best idea, and doing good products. It's cliche, but this is the answer. Yeah, so there is no technique I could share that probably guys who want to build and grow their SaaS will not know. Okay, so like if you will solve customer problems and build a great product, probably this is the best way to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. It leads to a lot of referrals and word of mouth and organic growth. So that's awesome. Can we talk about geography, right? So you guys are you in Europe? Is that correct?
Yes, we've started. We are like a global company, but most of the team are based in Poland. But we have guys who are in Spain. Right now, one of our customer success is moving to Canada. Our CEO probably in 2-3 months is moving to US. Yeah. But like right now, the main office is in Poland in Europe.
Nice. And with that, right? So I think it puts you at an advantage as well as a disadvantage. I think the advantage, right, is like HubSpot and some of the other people in Europe probably don't have as much market penetration. So I think for you guys to build in your native countries and your kind of, you know, around you guys is probably easier, but then it probably makes it harder for you guys to enter the US because they're so dominant here. Is that accurate, right? Like it's been easier for you to grow internationally, and now as you look to grow into the US, it's going to be more competitive, or how do you view that?
So our first paying customer was from US.
Okay.
So we started as a global company, yeah, and like payment cards, etc. So we started as a global company. Still, our Polish translation is really not what I want to share with the audience. So we started as a global company, and the first sales was from US. But yes, US is a very, very competitive market, which as a startup, when you are promoting on, I don't know, Product Hunt or somewhere else, it's pretty easy. Yeah. So you can like light the spot. But because we were bootstrapped and we didn't have so much funding as our competitors, it was easier to grow with European customers. But like from 10 biggest customers, currently, I think only three are from Poland. So we have like our biggest customer is from Brazil, so South America. We have a lot of like global companies, where you don't know where is like the main office, because like there are people in Spain, there are people in Italy, there are people in Brazil, there are people in US. Yeah, especially because of COVID, it changed a lot. So but you are totally right. Yeah, like right now it's the moment, but we are planning to enter this biggest but also most competitive market, so US market.
Yeah, it's interesting. In my head, I'm thinking about like, man, you're in Brazil and you're in Poland and you're in the US and you're in Canada and you're in all these markets, you know, for places that don't, you know, support, let's say, you know, English as a language, like for example, like in Brazil or Portugal or Spain, how do you guys support so many different countries? You know, is it just as simple as like Google Translate? But you also probably have to have people on the team that speak multiple language, they're bilingual, to understand and actually answer support tickets, right? Like, how does that work? Or is English at this point so universal that you can get away with just that?
The most common language is bad English. Yes. So being honest, we had support in the Russian language. Person who were working on qualification. So we are calling our leads by phone after registration, had a Spanish experience, but we are currently like English is the main language, and we are not on that level where we want to localize on specific markets. Yeah, so I don't know, translated to German or translated to Spanish. We are just a global company, yeah, and doing English first. Even our Polish customers are like sometimes speaking to us because we have like international team, yeah, and some of our team members don't speak Polish, so our live chat support is also in English. So we don't translate it to another language, but with the some special cases, yeah. So sometimes it can be Spanish, sometimes it can be Russian, sometimes it can be Polish, but like the main language is English. Yeah.
Right on. Okay, I got a few questions. My last main question is, what are some of like the biggest things that companies are getting wrong with marketing automation? Or what are some of the biggest things that people are just missing? Or what are the biggest myths? You can answer any of that variation. So what are people getting wrong with marketing automation? Or what are people just frankly not doing? Or what are some misconceptions? Any of those?
Yeah, cool. Sure. I think that the biggest problem is that people think that this is just a magic red button that I will add payment cards, push that magic red button, and everything will be automated. Yeah, so the problem is solved. I will grow and like all my nightmares are off, and this is not like this is not true. Yeah. So if you want to automate your marketing, first you have to have a good marketing. Yeah. So first do some elements manually. And if it's working, then you can automate it. Second thing is that, like, we are selling technology. We are selling, like, tools. Yeah. People don't want tools. They want, like, processes working. Yeah. So I know that you are a Klaviyo hard user. Yeah. So you can buy Klaviyo or you can buy user.com, but it won't, like, write an emails for you, write a great copy, like, better understand your customer, like, create those, I don't know, onboarding campaigns or rescuing abandoned cars campaigns. So I think that people think that if I will buy marketing automation, this is the end of the journey. Yeah, so the tool will do it for me. Probably it's like if you want to create some dinner or supper for somebody, it's like just going to grocery and, like, picking some products, and this is the moment. But it's really, really hard work to cook something tasty that will taste you. Yeah, so it will be good for you. And this is, like, I think that the biggest problem I see, that, like, technology or tools won't solve your problems. First, you have to define what is your goal. Yeah, so what you want to achieve, because with this marketing automation technology, you can, like, grow your number of subscribers for newsletters, or you want to, like, increase customer lifetime value, yeah, or increase number of returning customers. Yeah, so if you have the goals, you have to figure out scenarios. Yeah. So if customer is visiting my blog and he scrolls down to, like, half of the web page, I'm showing him a pop-up with 10 things for something connected to my industry. And if somebody will submit this pop-up, I'm sending him in first email this thing, and second email after 3 days this thing, and in third email after next 7 days this thing. And for that, you don't need any tool. So you need, like, Google Docs or piece of sheet of paper and pen. Yeah. And yeah, if you write down your goals and if you write down the scenarios you want to achieve, then you have to think about, okay, so let's write those emails. Let's plan it, like, create those creatives. Yeah. Texts, images, et cetera, et cetera. And if you will have that, like, creating an automation is like piece of cake. It's like 3 minutes in any tool. But if you don't know what you want to do and you're, okay, I will try this tool or I will try this tool, it might not be a success. Yeah. So this is my, like, point of view. What is the main problem with marketing automation? And
I love it. I love it. Two more questions. So in 30 seconds, can you describe who's a good fit for user.com? Like, you know, what kind of size customer, maybe what platforms have they tried in the past? Like, I don't know, who's, like, the best, like, ideal customer for user.com? Like, who's a good profile for you guys?
We are a best fit for smart online businesses, okay, which have probably more than 10 people in marketing department. It wasn't such a way from the beginning, because we had a freemium model. We were targeting small and medium businesses, but currently probably not a Shopify user, but a Shopify Plus for okay. sure. Many times simple marketing automation tools like, I don't know, Klaviyo and ActiveCampaign is lacking of channels of communication or lacking of some capabilities. And our tool is more advanced in that way, that you can, like, you don't have to use several tools to manage it. So loyalty program in one tool, live chat in second tool, chatbots in third tool, pop-ups in fifth tool, and email somewhere. You have all in one platform where you can build those automation. Yeah, so I think that if you are hit the, I don't know how to say it in English, but
the ceiling.
Yeah, if you hit the ceiling with your current marketing stack, yeah, so like MailChimp or Klaviyo, it's not enough because you want to try with some omni-channel experience, with you're trying with a mobile app, maybe it's time for user.com. And maybe if you don't want to go with like big players like Salesforce and Marketo, because it's like only for corporation, probably it might be a good fit for you.
Awesome. All right. And the last question I have is, where can people find user.com? So it's literally user.com. That part's simple.
Yeah.
And what are the social handles?
Oh, it's more complicated because it's like user.com official, user.com.
Okay.
They can always ping me. I have the simplest email ever, mike@user.com. And amazing. I'm happy to speak with them.
Amazing. Mike, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom.
Thank you, Chase, for invitation. And thank you for being here.
Of course.